On the afternoon of April 30th, 1956, a man who belied his 78 years was riding in a convertible at the head of a parade through the streets of the small town of Lexington, Virginia. Less than 2 hours later, that man was dead. His name, Albin W. Barkley, Senator from Kentucky. Senator Barkley was in Lexington to deliver the keynote address at Washington and Lee University's mock Democratic convention. The afternoon was warm. The senator turned to one of his companions in the automobile in which he was riding and said, "This is one of the happiest days of my life." After the parade, the convention was called to order in Convention Hall on the Washington and Lee campus. The secretary read the call for the convention. The mayor of Lexington gave an address of welcome, and Virginia's Governor Thomas B. Stanley introduced the keynote speaker. More than 1,000 student delegates stood, cheered, and applauded for almost 2 minutes. And then Albin W. Barkley began his last speech.
Governor Stanley, my fellow Americans, and by the same token, my fellow Democrats. I feel very highly honored, of course, by being chosen as your keynoter and your temporary chairman. I hope that my remarks and my appearance and my chairmanship may receive the same approval after I've finished that I have had before I start. It may be that I owe an explanation to Washington and Lee for having attended the law school of the University of Virginia. I have one to give you. I was nurtured in the cradle of Jeffersonian democracy. I grew up in the same sort of atmosphere in the memory of Andrew Jackson. And I really studied democracy at the feet of Woodrow Wilson. Mrs. Barkley and I are very happy to be here today, to be your guests, and to be allowed to say a few words on this occasion. As the governor has said, I have been a delegate at large from the state of Kentucky from 1920 until this hour. I have been temporary chairman of three of them, permanent chairman of one, and took some part in all of them. And I had about concluded that maybe I had gone to enough conventions and I would not go to the one in Chicago this year. But since arriving in Lexington and since arriving in this hall, the old fire horse hears the bell. Whoever you may nominate here today, I'll be on my way. It is not easy to draw a picture of a great political party that has existed during the entire history of the United States, as has the Democratic Party. There has never been an election since 1800, when the author of the Declaration of Independence, the author of the Virginia Statute for Religious Liberty, and the founder of the University of Virginia was elected president. There has never been a year or an election since that time when the Democratic Party was not the voice of the people crying from the wilderness in behalf of these same people and the cause which they represent. Somebody asked me the other day, what is the difference between the Democratic and Republican parties? And my answer is, the difference between progress and stagnation. In 1912, Woodrow Wilson stated that the Republican Party had not had a new idea in 40 years. That was 44 years ago, making 84 years in all. Why do I say that? I say it because I can with truth ask you here today or any other convention of either Democrats or Republicans to name one single great constructive statute that's on the books of the law today that was initiated or inaugurated by the Republican Party. And as we approach the presidential campaign of 1956, we know, you know, the American people know, and the Republican Party knows that it must run on its own record now, and not on the record of somebody else. It was under the administration of Grover Cleveland that the first rural mail route in America was established. It was under Grover Cleveland that the first act to regulate commerce, creating the Interstate Commerce Commission, was enacted into law. Now that's going a long way back, but you want the foundations, don't you, for what I said a moment ago? Yeah. You don't want me to say anything here today that I can't prove, do you?
No.
All right. It was under the administration of Woodrow Wilson that the great Federal Reserve System was established, which enabled us to finance two great wars in the last generation. It was under the administration of Woodrow Wilson that the Federal Trade Commission was set up to give a forum where business, large and small, might find a redress for its grievances. I might say that a great Virginian who served in the House and in the Senate and in the Cabinet, of whom I was fond indeed, was one of the constructors of that great economic and financial legislation, the Honorable Carter Glass. It was under the administration of Woodrow Wilson that the greatest tariff law ever enacted in our history was enacted, in the Underwood-Simmons tariff law of 1913, which was described as the fairest tariff ever enacted in the history of this nation. And it is the only one of the great record of Woodrow Wilson's enactments that the Republicans have ever repealed. And when they repealed that, they brought on a worldwide, nationwide panic from which it took the Democratic Party to rescue this nation in 1933. It was the Democratic Party that enacted the Clayton Antitrust Law, bringing down to date and up to date the antitrust laws of our country to protect the American people against monopolies and trusts. It was the Democratic Party that first enacted a highway law to give aid by the government of the United States to our states and counties in the building of highways. And that law has been in effect from 1916 until now. And now all the eyes in our administration has been able to do has been ask us to extend that law and build more highways, and we're going to build more than he asked us to build them. It was the Democratic Party that established the Department of Labor and appointed the first Secretary of Labor in the cabinet of the President of the United States. It was under the leadership of Woodrow Wilson and the Democratic Party that the amendment to the Constitution giving the women of this nation the right to vote came into effect in 1920. I never thought that woman suffrage would bring the millennium. But it couldn't have made it any worse than it was before. Then came World War I. Following World War I, it was the great Democratic President of the United States who tried to bring about peace in the world and to organize mankind for peace instead of war. He gave his life for that cause. And our great domestic program was interfered with by the war. And then came the Republicans. Which were worse than the war. Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. Now, I don't mention those names through any disrespect. I have respect for anybody elected president of the United States. But I do have to mention them because they did live and they were president. At the end of their 12 years, the American people were in the depths of the greatest economic and social and moral depression in the history of this nation. And then what happened? The American people did what they always do when they get in trouble. They called on the Democratic Party to relieve them from that. Franklin D. Roosevelt became the President of the United States. During his administration, more laws were enacted for the benefit of the American people than were ever enacted in any 50 years of our history prior to that time. I need not here recite them, but I mention merely the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, known as the AAA, which lifted the farmer out of the ditch and put his feet on solid ground. And it is a strange similarity that today that same farmer is in the same ditch and the Democrats are going to have to lift him out and put him on solid ground if he gets out of there. It was the same Democratic Party that enacted the law guaranteeing bank deposits of the people of the United States. During the 12 years to which I've just referred, bank failures were occurring everywhere, all over the nation, due to our foresight, due to our courage, due to the constructive ability of the Democratic Party, we enacted a new banking law and guaranteed the deposits of our people so that they now have faith in their banks. And so long as they have faith in their banks, there'll be no runs on our banks and no bank failures. Yeah. It was the Democratic Party that gave to the nation and to the world, and particularly to the Western Hemisphere, the good neighbor policy of Cordell Hull, one of the greatest secretaries of state in the history of the United States. Under former Republican administrations, we had what was called dollar diplomacy, by which was meant our ambassadors that's only a symbol of what's going to happen to the Republicans in November. During previous Republican administrations, we'd had what was called dollar diplomacy, which meant that our ambassadors to our neighbors in South and Central America were sent there largely to exploit those people for the dollars of American investors and American businessmen. Cordell Hull, Tennessee, who married a Virginia girl, brought about the new neighbor, the good neighbor policy with our neighbors to the South. And to show you that the Republicans are trying under a guise of originality to keep the same thing but give it a different name. A couple of weeks ago, they unveiled a bust of Cordell Hull in the Pan American Union building in Washington. And the distinguished gentleman who unveiled and made a speech about it was unwilling to call it a good neighbor policy because it was Democratic. He renamed it the good partner policy. They've renamed everything, but they've kept it. Now we have the good neighbor policy with our Central and South American neighbors. And when we were for the second time drawn into a world war which we had not caused against our will, every one of these American republics joined us in our fight to preserve democracy, freedom, the dignity of man. Every great constructive legislative enactment that has found its way to the statutes of the American Congress in the last 50 years was put there by the Democratic Party. Recommended by Democratic presidents. Therefore, I say without any equivocation that the Democratic Party has been the forward-looking, progressive, constructive party in the history of our nation. It will be, as the world goes on now in its great economic struggle to preserve democracy, to hand our nation down to those who are to come after in the generations to come, free and strong. The Democratic Party fighting for the rights of the great masses of our people and not for any particular group of our people. Yeah! The great founder of our party was an apostle of equal rights to all and exclusive privileges to none. We are for all kinds of business so long as it's honest, big or little. We are those who feel that after all, in our economic struggle and in the complexity of our lives, government cannot be indifferent to the welfare of all classes of our people. And therefore, we have a foreign policy, we have a domestic policy. We have a foreign policy, we have a labor policy. We have an old age policy, we have a youth policy. We are not like the Republicans who only have one policy, and that's an insurance policy that insures you for what you need and pays you off and everything you've got more of than you need. We have an amplitude of worthy material, half a dozen or more, any one of whom would grace the White House and honor the American people with his service. My friends, I'm not going to test your patience by holding you off much longer from the real business of this convention. I want to announce to you, though, and if I had not known it in advance, I would have known it when I saw all the floats in the great parade which you put on. But I am myself not a candidate. I have been in years gone by. Sufficiently alert to present conditions to know that all fire apparatus are now automotive and not horse-drawn. I have seen the time when I was like old Thomas B. Reed of Maine, who was Speaker of the House of Representatives back in 1896, when William McKinley was nominated, and he was a candidate. He was known as the Czar Reed. Some of you students have heard about Czar Reed. He became known as Czar Reed because he was so arbitrary and ruthless in his rulings as the Speaker of the House of Representatives. He was a candidate for the nomination of the Republican Party for president in 1896. He was getting a very good vote, but not enough. Finally, a member of the House came up to the stand and said, "Mr. Speaker, do you think they're going to nominate you out there?" "Well," he said, "my friend, by George, they could go further and do worse, and I'm afraid they will." "But I have no longer any personal interest. I have served my country and my people for half a century as a Democrat." I went to the House of Representatives in 1913 and served 14 years. I was a junior congressman. Then I became a senior congressman. And then I went to the Senate and became a junior senator. And then I became a senior senator. And then majority leader of the Senate. And then vice president of the United States. And now I'm back again as a junior senator. I am willing to be a junior. I am glad to sit on the back row, for I would rather be a servant in the house of the Lord than to sit in the seats of the mighty.
Senator Barkley just collapsed as he finished saying, "I had rather be a servant in the house of the Lord than in the seat of the mighty." Senator Barkley has just collapsed on the platform. He's being fanned by the chairman of the convention. A doctor has been summoned. Delegates are standing. There is just an air of disbelief